All right, well, we are dealing with the 12 myths of Christmas. Any memory of what the first three might have been?
When?
The who? When?
What time?
Oh, was it on the 25th when he was born? Right. Which we have no idea when Jesus was actually born. Right, We Three Kings is the song that we sing, but there's no evidence from Scripture that they were actually kings. And the last one was... there was... when he was born, and then the question of where he was born. Was he born in a cave or a stable? And again, we're not really told a whole lot. Not even told about any animals that were there necessarily. We know that the shepherds left their sheep in the field that they were tending. So there probably weren't a lot of sheep there necessarily, but he was laid in a manger. So there was a livestock element there for sure. So we're going into myth number four. And myth number four is that the shepherds and the wise men saw the infant Jesus at the same time. Now, where did we get that idea?
That's all we can fit into the program on Sunday. All of it at one time.
Right. But the nativity scene is the scene where we have baby Jesus in the manger with Mary and Joseph and the shepherds and the wise men and the angel and the star. Okay. Well, all of those are kind of mixing stories together. All of those things happened. All of those things were a part of the birth of Christ. But we have no evidence that angels were involved at the birth of Christ. They were involved with telling the shepherds who were watching their sheep by night in the fields. So we don't know that there are angels involved at the very birthplace of Christ. And the wise men, we know, were there. They weren't at the place where he was born, because when you look at Matthew chapter 2, verses 9 through 11, the story of when the wise men were looking for Christ. After hearing the king, they went their way, and the star which they had seen in the east went on before them until it came and stood over the place where the child was. So, that doesn't tell us exactly where Jesus was when the star stopped to show them the way. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy, and after coming into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and fell to the ground and worshipped him. So, evidently, this is a little bit later because he wasn't in a manger. He wasn't in a stable. He wasn't in a cave. He was in a house. So, this event with the wise men bringing their gifts to Jesus and presenting them to him, he might have been several months old. We don't know how old Christ was when this event happened. We know that the angel's report to the shepherds was at the birth of Christ. So they came to the birth. The wise men might have been at his first birthday party. We don't really know for sure. But the wise men and the shepherds never crossed paths as far as the Bible tells us. Myth number five. Jesus never cried as a baby. Now, we just sang that, didn't we? No crying he makes. But is that a biblical assertion? No. He's going to... Now, I think there's... How old does a child have to be before they scream because they're angry? Yeah, that doesn't take too long before you see the sin nature starting to kind of creep out. But Christ wouldn't have done that. That would not be a part of his childhood interactions. But crying because of hunger, or, I mean, he had thirst and pain and hunger just like anyone else. So it's very likely that Christ cried just like every other baby would cry, except not with anger or malice or just trying to get their own way. Right. Right. So I'm sure his childhood interactions were different, but I don't think we can say no crying he made. But that brings up a good question. What do you think his childhood was like? I mean, was he walking on water and turning water into Kool-Aid the whole time he was growing up, or?
Well, I just read that book by Francine Rivers, Mary, and in it, his family, his brothers didn't ever know about his birth or anything. She did that book. She never said anything, but she told him anything. So he apparently was close to normal.
And that's the impression you get, because if Christ was throughout his entire life doing miraculous deeds, it seems like his brothers would have been on board when he said, "I am the Christ," except they weren't. They didn't believe that he was the Christ because he grew up just like they did. So the assumption is that Christ wasn't doing miraculous deeds throughout his childhood. He cried just like every baby cries, except without malice and without sin nature. Myth number 6. Christmas Day is the most holy day of the year for Christians. Now, that's probably a cultural assumption, but that is a myth. That is kind of the idea that people have, is that this Christmas is the high holy day for Christians. This is what we really set aside every year to worship God. And if you judge by church attendance, probably you would come to that conclusion, because there's always the CEO Christians, the Christmas and Easter only Christians that just come on those two holidays. But when it comes to Christmas Day, are we ever commanded, or is it even suggested, that we set aside the birth of Christ and celebrate the birth of Christ in Scripture? It's not. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but would it be fair to say that Christmas and the meaning of celebrating the birth of Christ has been hijacked a little bit in our culture, where it really doesn't mean the birth of Christ? It's a holiday. It's not Christmas. So Christmas Day, in biblical terms, is not a different day from any other day of the year. Because, number one, we don't know exactly the day that he was born. But number two, there's only one prescription of what we should set aside for God, a holy day, and that is the Sabbath. In the Old Testament, that was Saturday. In the New Testament, we celebrate Sabbath as Sunday, because that would be the day that Christ rose from the dead.
But that's not biblical either, is it? I mean, is there anything in the Scripture that says it has to be on the Sunday?
No, I don't think it necessarily has to be, but there was kind of the idea that there was a day set aside in the Old Testament,
right,
that was for worship, it was for fellowship. Right. So I think it is a valid assumption that God has that pattern built into the work week.
Well, the sugar thing in the New Testament, you know, the first few worships were probably on Sunday. And one of which authors said something about bringing your tithe, your
I think Paul was telling the Corinthians that to bring their tithes in on the first day of the week. But regardless, I think there is credence for setting aside a day of the week, but one day of the year as a holy day is not a biblical assertion. Actually, there is an opposite assertion in Scripture. In Colossians 2:16, it says, "Therefore, no one is to act as your judge in regard to food or drink, or in respect to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath day." So when it comes to these special celebrations, no one has the right to say, you have to do this on this day, when it comes to a yearly annual event. And those are what they're talking about there, those festivals and new moons. That those are either quarterly or yearly events that they said they were supposed to participate in. But also in Galatians 4, verses 9 and 10, it says, "But now that you have come to know God, or rather be known by God, how is it that you turn back again to the weak and worthless elemental things to which you desire to be enslaved all over again? You observe days and months and seasons and years." So Paul is really scolding the Galatians for having all of these observances, these quote-unquote holy days, that they were worried about doing this on this day and worried about doing that on that day. And he said, look, Christ set us free from the law in the Old Testament. All of those feasts and rituals and observances, all of those things were done away with when Christ split the veil in the temple, allowing free fellowship into the Holy of Holies for everyone. You don't enter into God's presence now by pleasing Him through bringing an offering or a sacrifice or a washing your hands or any of those things. Rather, you are acceptable to God because of your relationship with Jesus Christ. So our understanding that Christmas should be a holy day set aside for God is not a biblical concept. Now, again, I'm not saying at all that we shouldn't celebrate Christmas, that we shouldn't celebrate the birth of Christ. I think that's a wonderful idea. I'm just saying that it's a myth that that is a biblical requirement and expectation, that you are less spiritual or have done something wrong if you fail to do so. So those are some more things to think about. Is there anything that you would have a question about, or anything you would add?
Didn't they have, was it seven feast days or feasts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, when you start looking at the Jewish feasts and rituals, it was pretty intensive. There was a lot of things. They were supposed to travel back to Jerusalem once a year for the Passover. They were supposed to and do all of these rituals and bring sacrifices to the temple. And there were certain sacrifices for this and certain animals for that. And so...
Why did they go to Jerusalem for the Passover? And that wasn't where the original Passover even was.
Well, it was to remind them of God's goodness and His deliverance of them from Egypt, because that was when the angel of death passed over those who had the blood on the doorpost. I think that's because you have the temple worship going on, so you're going to where God was physically to celebrate what God did in Egypt. And that's what you find when Christ was entering in the triumphal entry. He was coming into Jerusalem, and the reason why that the religious leaders were a little hesitant to just go ahead and murder him right there was because there was probably a million or more people in and around Jerusalem just stacked on top of each other there celebrating the Passover. So it made sense for them to kind of wait a little bit and let all of that die down, and then we'll take care of him. But yeah, it is an interesting study, because all of those feasts and rituals and observances all pointed to Jesus Christ. That was their purpose. And they missed it.
But all along they thought he was going to be like David, like a warrior type to come and like everybody said.
They wanted a conquering king. They wanted somebody to come in and clean house and set up his kingdom right then and right there. But they didn't realize that Christ wasn't coming to set up an earthly kingdom. He was coming to break the bonds of Satan over the individual. He wanted to set up his own kingdom in their lives individually, and they wanted national. Right. They wanted something that they could put their hands on and point to and say God did that. But really, is there any more evidence of God's greatness and goodness than a changed life? I mean, when somebody was one thing and now they're something completely different, that's hard to argue with, that God changes sinners into saints. And that's what our lives are supposed to be about, a testament of God changing us from who we were into who he would have us to be. Anything else?